You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
As we head into the final weekend of the season, all of the division races are over, and it's just a matter of a couple of wild card races to be decided. I am Allison Footer. Let's talk to our reporters about what is going on with their teams, both the ones who are headed to the playoffs, the ones who might be headed to the playoffs, and the ones who are done for the year.
I'm really grateful to ownership to have that vision and to trust me in this chair. It goes to the responsibility that I feel as a first minority manager for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
And I'm the luckiest person in the whole world. God has been so good to me, it's mind-boggling. I'll miss the fans, the sounds of the fans.
I'm very happy to be here today to announce my decision to join the Dodgers organization.
You know the guys already, so you're not trying to learn different people. You can kind of build those relationships even more, and now you're out there trying to win a job this year.
Career high 8Ks now for Maeda. What a performance from Kenta Maeda.
13 strikeouts and one walk. He's bigger than anybody in the room. Wow.
Dodgers top prospect Julio Urias is set to make his Major League debut on Friday night in New York against the Mets.
He brings it all. Like, I don't know what more you'd want from a stuff standpoint with Julio Urias.
Now that's the way to begin a Major League career. He threw behind Utley. Did they just kick Syndergaard out?
They did.
Unbelievable as Chase Sutley is homer twice.
We're going back on it as Marquez and watches it go out.
And that one's gone.
Home run for Seager, his third of the night. Ground ball right by the diving Espinosa, stopping at second, and the ball goes through Taylor's legs. Here comes Kendrick to tie. Puig is on his way. The relay is double clutch. Can you believe it? The Dodgers win it 4-3.
A couple of hours ago, manager Dave Roberts announced that Clayton Kershaw had an epidural in his lower back. He's been placed on the disabled list, and at this point, the Dodgers have no idea when their ace will return.
That one is gone. Grand ball has hit another. Fastball whacked into right center field. Oh, that is a historic home run for Grandal.
In the final hours before the trade deadline, the Dodgers able to do kind of one-stop shopping for a couple of different holes. They get Rich Hill for the rotation. They get Josh Reddick for the outfield, both from the A's.
The Dodgers just reached a breaking point with Yasiel Puig. Some of it was performance-related. Some of it was the fact that there was a word, insubordination, that was used in connection with him.
Kenley Jansen coming in to try to tie a ribbon on the package. Boy, he's something, isn't he? Wow. And he got him. Strike three. That'll do it. Got him.
I'm happy that I was given the opportunity again. It's really helped me to go to Oklahoma City and being able to share with the coaches there and with the other players. I hope this helps me moving forward.
I think I'm pitching in 4 days or 5 days. And I think that we're still kind of ironing some stuff out. But, you know, at this point, it's more of a pitch count deal, making sure that, you know, I can contribute.
He's back. Clayton Kershaw has been 75 days.
Down on strikes, his 150th strikeout of the year.
Rich Hill ready to make a star tonight.
Gets him with the breaking ball. Well, that's the fourth strikeout. 8 strikeouts for Hill and retired 18 in a row. Long run for Puig. And he makes a spectacular catch. The perfect game remains intact.
So it appears right now that Rich Hill is not going to take the mound in the eighth inning.
A lot of fans in Los Angeles that are really upset with me, I'm sure. But the city of Los Angeles, the Dodgers, you know, I think, in my opinion, that was the best thing for us to win a championship.
2-0 against the Giants this year. 2-2 pitch, fastball swung on and missed. 1-2 pitch on the way. Clayton Deals, fastball in there. And the pitch up and in. Slow change up. Fastball grilled him. Off speed, Nunez couldn't wait. Got him.
To the best of our count, since 1950, there have been 975 players who have worn the Dodger uniform. And he has announced the names of every last one of them.
I've loved this game for 80 years. That's a lot of years. But at no time did I ever waver in my allegiance
to the greatest sport we have in this world.
And a high drive into deep right field. Seager has done it again and tied up the game 3-3.
0-1 to Charlie. Swung on a high fly ball to deep left field. The Dodgers have been Yankees. Would you believe a home run? And the Dodgers have clinched the division and will celebrate on schedule. Charlie Culberson, a game-winning home run. What a moment to have it. And would you believe his first home run of the year?
I kind of thought this weekend would go down to the Giants and Dodgers. That didn't happen. But the Giants are in a good position as we're speaking, as we're recording this. They're second in the wild card standing. So if the season ended today, they would go to New York to play the wild card game. So let's talk about some scenarios. If this thing ends in a tie, if there's like a three-way tie on Sunday, I think the Giants go to St. Louis to play a one-game playoff. Is that what it is?
You know, I believe so, but I'll be very honest. There's so many different scenarios. It's tough to keep them straight. I think they're designating Team A, Team B, and Team C. And there are several different combinations of circumstances.
Yeah, it's. I guess we talk every week, and I'm like, I've since stopped waiting for the Giants to like make any kind of run and push, put together any kind of string of good games. It's sort of humorous just to look at the Mets and the Giants and the Cardinals, who have all underperformed for so long, and now it's like everyone's like, does anybody really want this? But the Giants, I guess, I mean, if they do end up getting this and getting into that wild card game, they have to like their chances. Who would it be? Samardzija? Is that would be like the likely pitcher for the wild card game?
Allison, it sounds like it would be, or it looks like it would be, given that Madison Bumgarner will pitch this weekend, and I don't know what they can get out of Johnny Cueto tonight. Who knows what's going to happen there? So, if they can get him a lead, or if he can hold him down for a few innings, I'll bet they get him out of there after five. They may not want to mess with him, push him too much, even though he has handled a lot of innings this year. If they somehow manage to play the wild card game at home, maybe Matt Moore, Matt Moore could be a choice if he's better rested than Bumgarner, just because he's pitched really well lately at AT&T, and being left-handed, that throws in a wrinkle also. So they have some options for the wild card game if it gets that far, and probably will.
Yeah, no, it's looking pretty good for the Giants. What is it like? This has just been a very weird second half. Very weird season, but really weird second half. So now, what's it like just post-game? I mean, all the reporters go in there and they talk to the players. There has to be some sense of, I don't even know what the word is, but just some sense of like, okay, here we go again, kind of asking the same questions. The players have to answer the same questions. Like, they're still very much in it. Yet there's a lot of times they lose games and they just don't lose ground because everyone else is losing too. Has there been any change just in the whole approach from, some of the more media savvy guys when they're like talking to you guys about trying to figure out what all is going on?
As you were forming that question, Allison, I was thinking about the here we go. I was thinking the words here we go again, and then you just said them, here we go again. That's funny. There is a lot of here we go again in the clubhouse, and even the, as you say, more media savvy guys, at least publicly, they keep a stiff upper lip, try to maintain optimism. They know they're better than what they've played, than how they've performed in the second half. Question is, were they as good as they were in the first half? To borrow from another sport, Bill Parcells, the famed football coach, said, "You are what you are." So if you're 57-33 or whatever it was the Giants were in the first half, I guess they were a 57-33 team. And if they're a 333 winning percentage team like they've been a lot of the second half, you know, maybe they are that bad. So, but those extremes are just so dramatic, they defy logic. So it's tough for guys to sum things up. It's been tough on manager Bruce Bochy. You know, it's been one of the strangest years in Giants history and maybe in baseball history.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, the only thing that would be more fitting is for them to obviously win the World Series, which I think everybody would expect.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, people forget that the Cardinals won it, what was it, 2011, with 83 and, or was it, maybe it was before that, with an 83-79 regular season record. And nobody ever brings that up. They just bring up that the Cardinals won the World Series in that particular year. So, shoot, all you got to do is, as the Giants have kept on saying, all you got to do is get there and then take your chances.
But, yes, the Diamondbacks are very close to having their vacation plans kick in earnest. But we still have a couple of things to talk about. I thought this was interesting. Ruby De La Rosa is going to try to avoid a second surgery and just do some stem cell injections. So what can you tell us about that, and how optimistic are they that he's going to be able to be as good as new without any surgeries?
Yeah, Allison, it's kind of a shame because Ruby was really finally looked like he was putting it all together there in late May, and then he had the elbow issue, and so they thought rest could take care of it. And then when he came back here in September, he still just wasn't feeling quite right. He went and saw Dr. James Andrews, who performed his first Tommy John surgery, and he had taken a plasma-rich injection earlier this year. And so the next two options were either Tommy John surgery and a second one, or to try the stem cell injection treatment, which is, there's not a ton of science behind it yet in terms of how effective it is. But I guess when Dr. Andrews looked at the MRI of the ligament, he determined that it wasn't quite significant enough for surgery. And so they wanted to try something else before they resorted to having a second Tommy John, because certainly the recovery from a second Tommy John is not as, the percentages are not as great as from just one. So they're hoping to avoid that. So Ruby is supposed to have that done this week, and won't know for sure really until he starts throwing again during spring training off a mound and in a competitive situation whether or not the injections work. So it's going to be a little while. They're cautiously optimistic that hopefully he'll be okay once spring training rolls around next year. But, again, they won't know that for sure for quite some time.
Yeah, I guess they've already got questions going to spring training, but that's a long way away. Another person, another pitcher that we won't be seeing again this season would be Zach Greinke, who shoulder tightness, so he's not going to make any more starts. I guess kind of silly to ask like how severe this is, because it's sort of the end of the season and there won't be any monitoring going on, I'm sure, through October. But I don't know, that's kind of a bummer that he's done, right?
Yeah, I think that was something that caught people by surprise. He said he felt some stiffness in his shoulder after that last start in San Diego. They feel better after having an MRI taken of it. It showed a little inflammation but no structural issues. So they just figured rather than try to rush him back and make two starts at the end of what's become a lost season for them, it just made more sense to shut him down, let him rest. And, it doesn't seem like there's enough of a concern to where they would have to monitor it here going forward in the offseason, more just like something that with rest should calm down and he should be ready to go by the time spring training comes around next year.
So they have another arm that they want to look at, Matt Cook, who is going to get the start instead. And needless to say, this would be a tryout for next year. He's made some bullpen appearances. This will be his first major league start. So they're pretty curious about this. This could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, they like what they saw from him. First off, spring training, and then he put together some good minor league numbers this year, made five relief appearances and looked impressive, including a four-inning save. So they figured with Greinke not making his final two starts, they had a number of options, one of which that they really thought long and hard about was Patrick Corbin, putting him back in the rotation. But they feel like Corbin's shown them enough in the bullpen with some long relief appearances to know that next year, going into next year, he is going to be part of the rotation. So they figured they may as well use these last two open starts to kind of get a look at Matt Cook and see what he looks like against some pretty good competition, at least here in Washington, for his first start. So that's kind of it's certainly a chance for him to put himself on the radar for the rotation next year.
AJ, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of like an optimistic person by nature when I read coverage of all the different teams. But as we talked last time about the really top prospects that were coming up to the Padres so that the front office could kind of get a good look at them, I don't know. I think this just bodes well for the future. So I want to focus on Manny Margot because he's pretty much the one that everybody's watching the most. What are kind of some of your early observations of him? He's clearly a very fast guy. What have you seen from him?
Well, so far, I mean, he's the youngest of the bunch, and it seems like that is not even the slightest bit of a hurdle. He plays the game kind of with this infectious energy that you like to see from a guy his age. He kind of does a little bit of everything. He's as quick as they come. He covers an unbelievable amount of ground in center field, and when he hits the ball kind of seems to jump off his head. He's got a line drive swing. So I think the Padres fans have been waiting a while to see what he could do at the major league level. I know he's only 21, about to turn 22, but they've been waiting pretty much all season. And I kind of would have said, hey, temper your expectations. The kid's only 21. And so far I would have been proven dead wrong. It looks like he belongs here.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. It's got to be, this is a time that they really, I mean, every non-contending team does spend this time looking at some of their September call-ups, kind of having, a tryout of sorts, even though they wouldn't actually ever call it that. But there's other teams like, I mean, not to call anybody out, but like I was talking to Steve Gilbert about the Diamondbacks, and they don't have nearly as much to really be looking at now to look forward to next year to be feeling pretty good about things. And the Padres, as we've been talking about, I mean, they have really been working in the last couple of years to get into the situation where they are building. And so I think that they have to feel like next year could be totally different from this year.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that there's an aspect of that is their own doing, that this year is so different from next year because they opted to keep all these four guys at AAA as long as they did. And part of it could be viewed as a little bit of a hindrance because they've got these four guys who could potentially have roster spots next year. If you ask me, I'd say all four of them are probably going to be on the opening day roster next season, or at least they'll be on the team very quickly. They don't really know what these guys can do yet. The sample size is way too small. Yes, Manny Margot's look good. Yes, Carlos Quay hit the ball hard a few times. Yes, Hunter Renfroe is a cannon in right field, but the sample size is just way too small to really know. So while other teams may have gotten the entire September to look at these kids, Padres get 2 weeks. And I think going into spring training, it's just going to be the whole entire roster is going to be a total toss-up. There's going to be position battles. I talked to Andy Green about this. He says there's going to be position battles pretty much across the board. I think Will Myers at first base, and Hervis Solarte at third. And even he could potentially move to second. I think Ryan Schimpf profiles better as third baseman. So it's just wide open going into next spring.
Yeah. So you had a really interesting story about Rule 5 pick Luis Perdomo. And I thought it was interesting. The whole Rule 5 phenomenon is fascinating if you really dissect it. But the fact is that once you pick them, they have to stay on the Major League roster all season, which is often a detriment to the player and the player's development. But with Perdomo, he's made this progress, and then he kind of had like a light bulb moment halfway through. He could really be a part of the team's future. Can you kind of just explain like what went on with him and his progression this year?
Yeah, he could end up being the number two starter next season, which is unbelievable. I'll say one thing, going back to spring training and even the first month of the season, it looked like there was no way he was going to sneak through the season with the Padres. And that was kind of their plan all along, sneak him through the year, kind of keep him under the radar at the back of the bullpen. But he couldn't even – he was having trouble making it through one inning. I know on opening day he gave six runs in one inning to the Dodgers. And then the front office kind of called down to Darren Balsley, the pitching coach, and said, hey, you need to try a sinker with him. Because his four-seam fastball, his fastball hit 97, 98 miles an hour, but he wasn't getting any swings and misses on it. So they asked him to develop a sinker. And I talked to Perdomo about it, and he essentially said that the players were kind of sitting on his four-seam fastball, and they were hitting it whenever he fell behind in the count. And he says, hey, now they're sitting on my sinker. when I fall behind in the count. But they're hitting the same pitch. They're just hitting ground balls to shortstop and ground balls to second base. So essentially what he kind of developed, it took all of one game of catch to develop this pitch. He wasn't even throwing a bullpen session. It was just Darren Bosley and Luis Perdomo tinkering with his grip. And he found a grip that worked for him, and all of a sudden he has this nasty sinker that's kind of gotten him through the season. He's been the Padres' best pitcher in the second half of the season. So he's only 23 years old. I think the plan next year was for him to go to Double-A, or initially it was. Now, like I said, he could end up being the number two starter heading into the season. So it's a remarkable story. He's and part of it, you can't attribute everything to the sinker. Sinker's a great pitch. Part of it's his mental makeup. He's the type of kid who, when he gave up six runs to the Dodgers in opening day, didn't really seem to get too down on himself, which when you're 23 years old and you've never pitched above single A, that seems to me like that's pretty rare. So it's a combination, I'd say, of his mental makeup and just the fact that he's developed a pitch and obviously has a lot of talent.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, like, there's got to be, like, a confidence issue, right? So when something clicks like that and then he goes out and it works, I mean, and the confidence factor that you talk about is mental makeup. I mean, that's all sort of goes hand in hand. And that could really go a long way if he goes into every start thinking, okay, now I'm the man. And, you know, I say that. I mean, most major league players feel that way all the time, even when they're out there getting their, getting their stuff handed to them. But confidence, I mean, it's got to be huge in this situation.
Yeah, and here, an interesting story. Carlos Villanueva, who's kind of a veteran reliever in the Padres bullpen, I guess, pulled Andy Green's side at some point in May, and they were talking about Perdomo, and he essentially said, hey, he's got what it takes. It's just going to take him a little bit, and he relayed the story of Hector Rondon, who was also a Rule 5 pick, and I believe he was coming off surgery in 2013 for the Cubs. Villanueva was a part of that team. He said, yeah, it just took him half the season. He figured something out, something clicked, and all of a sudden he was dominant. It takes some time with these Rule 5 guys. I would never have said Luis Perdomo would have been the best pitcher on the staff in the second half if you had asked me in spring training because he was just getting lit up. But so much of it is a confidence thing, and he has that. The pitch, you can kind of see it's very clear that he belongs now in the Padres clubhouse, and that's more than one of his teammates and coaches has said that.
Oh, that's awesome. Good for him. So just one last topic on a very sad note, but with Solarte losing his wife, it came as a big shock to people that obviously are not locked into the Padres and didn't know what was going on. Lost his wife to cancer, such a young woman, and three daughters. So such tragic news. He seems to be taking some kind of comfort in having returned to the team and really been given a lot of support. Is that something that's been helping him? Does he seem to be doing okay?
As okay as you can be. Obviously, it's just the news is just crushing. But I think one thing that you get reminded with everything that's happened, obviously the Solarte news and the Jose Fernandez news, is that baseball is more than just like a collection of guys that play a sport. They're all kind of there for each other and relate to each other on some level. And obviously it's cliche to call a team a family, but I think from what I've seen so far, the Padres view it as a family, and they view it as how can we support him in any way. And he kind of views it as kind of a comfort zone family type atmosphere to be back here. So I think, It seems to me that he's in the right place right now, being here back with the team. Obviously, wherever he needed to be, the Padres were willing to work with him. But I think that's something that shouldn't be overlooked is the sense of a family that Major League Baseball as a whole. It wasn't just, I mean, the Rockies had a moment of silence for Juliet Solarte. It was just kind of everyone kind of comes together when things turn tragic like this.
You know, every time I look at the Rockies record and their place in the standings, I have one feeling. And then when I start looking at some of the individual players, I feel a lot more optimistic about things. Nolan Arenado got his 40th home run. We talk about him all the time, but we need to talk about him more now. Just an extraordinary season that this guy has had. And he seems to just be getting better every week. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, here's a guy you knew the power showed up a couple of years ago, and last year especially. But what's happened this year is he's made himself a better hitter. He's got a chance to finish this year with a 300 average, which really is saying a lot for a guy who really so early in his career has displayed such power. So offensively, he's gone from not just a run producer, but to a force all the way around. He's taking his walks when he needs them. He didn't show up thinking, I need to walk more. Instead, he just learned how to be more selective about the pitches he swings at, learned the pitchers better, and that has led to some walks. I know there are a lot of people out there that really love the on-base percentage. I like it, but if you can hit him over the fence, I love it when you swing the bat, but right now he can do both of those things.
Now, it's got to be nice to look at the middle of the order, and we're going to talk about the season review a little bit later, but just to have – there seems to be quite a foundation offensively. Not that – I mean, there were no questions coming into the season surrounding the offense, the lineup, but that has to be nice for a front office to know that they can kind of go with that, maybe tweak here and there, but not have to do any major overhauling because of some of the emergence of some of these young guys.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the – top and middle of the order, you have to say, because Charlie Blackman became such a force at the top of the order with the home runs that he's added to his game, the fact that he can get on base. He can steal a base, but that was down a little bit. However, the power he hit with and the ability to get to second base on a double really canceled that out. And then you had DJ LeMahieu, who has been at the top of the National League in hitting the entire season. And Carlos Gonzalez, who, it's funny, I mean, for a guy who just turned, 30 this year, it seemed like there were a lot of people who were wondering if he was at the back end of his career, which I thought was kind of strange. It was all because of the injuries of the last couple of years. But now you're looking at essentially 2 years of Carlos Gonzalez playing at an all-star level. So you surround that with Nolan Arenado, and then next season, you get Trevor Story back, who hit for very good power this year. What I'm looking for out of him is to see if he can have more consistent at-bats, and he just might. And one of the things that he decided to do while he was out was watch guys like Nolan Arenado, Carlos Gonzalez to an extent, but definitely Nolan Arenado, who's a right-handed power guy like he is, and guys on other teams like a Paul Goldschmidt. He's really analyzing their at-bats, and what he's hoping is that he comes in a better hitter and he makes those adjustments the way Arenado did from year 1 to 2 to 3.
So Tracy Rigglesby, our esteemed colleague, he had an interesting column on the Rockies website recently about John Gray. I mean, he said flat out he pitched the greatest game in franchise history. And I was like, wow, how, why, where, when? First complete game of his career, but this was a beautiful game to be pitched, and it was at Coors Field. So what were your impressions of that? What were some of the details from that game?
It was total domination from John Gray. The fact that he could get to two strikes and throw a slider that the San Diego Padres could not hit, even if he gave them a boat oar. I mean, it was a very dominant game, and it may have been the greatest in Rockies history. I think it was the most dominating in Rockies history. I still feel that the best game in Rockies history was pitched by, of all people, Josh Fogg, when he faced 27 batters in Seattle one night against Jamie Moyer, actually, and ended up with a shutout. I believe it was 2-0. And I think Jamie Moyer threw a complete game 3 hitter, and the game lasted about 1 hour and 15 minutes. I mean, it was fast. I thought that was the best game that I've seen, but I do put Gray as the most dominating game I've seen, and I guess I could sit back and think about it, and maybe that is the best game. I know Jeff Francis threw a complete game that the game score stats put up there close to where Gray was. And, of course, there was Ubaldo Jimenez, no-hitter, but he walked like 5 or 6 that night. So, this was one of the best games I've ever seen, pitched by a Rockies pitcher. And what I like about John Gray is you look at that, you look at the pitching probables and you see his name there and you know something like that is possible. And Gray and also Tyler Anderson, another rookie, they have shown that they can do it at Coors Field. In fact, Anderson, all of his wins have come at home. So that's really good for the Rockies' future.